Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Professor Emerita of History from Guilford College in North Carolina, the wonderful Dr. Sarah Molino, is our very special guest, and we're continuing our journey and our series on history, and certainly women's history. And what a moment in time to talk about the role of women in culture, certainly in the political movement. We are just coming off of an inauguration on January 20th, and as of the 21st, you saw a massive movement of protesters led by women in solidarity, and all over the country, not just in Washington, not just in Washington, D.C., but all over the country. And I can't imagine that there is a relevant moment to point to in history. But then again, I'm not a professor of history. Sarah Molino is. Dr. Molino, welcome.
Thank you very much.
What about that? Is there a moment, is there an exact comparison in history to what we're seeing right now?
To the kind of mobilization of people in the streets,
right,
is what you're asking. Is that what you're, that's
yes.
what you would
Absolutely.
Like to know about?
Yeah.
Certainly there were protest marches. There have been major protest marches that have taken place. In the case of factory workers fighting their bosses and attempting to unionize, and they marched in protest in the 1920s and 30s. There was a moment, actually, after World War I, when there were strikes all over the country in 1919 of public service workers, and also factory workers, because after World War I, there was a depression, when the factories stopped making the military goods and the clothing and so on. They began to lay off workers, and then the workers were angry because the arrangements that they had during World War I protected them, and they were allowed to unionize. And then that movement, that political impetus to keep them unionized was also let go with the end of the war, with the end of the war arrangements. And so people we do have a history of protest in this country, massive protests. And in fact, I'm just thinking a little bit more about it now, that there was a huge movement called the populist movement,
yeah,
at the end of the 19th century of farmers and workers. And there were efforts
they were hoping to get the silver standard in.
Right. They were hoping to get the silver standard, but it was a moment when black and white farmers worked together, and union and laborers worked together. And if they had been able to actually unite the working class, which they were not able to do, if the Democrats had seen them as an asset, as opposed to, they also were opposed to banks, and they wanted, they wanted to nationalize the banks and the railroads,
right,
and the utilities and so on. That was a very radical movement. And in some ways, that was a moment when people gathered in towns and cities all over the country to support that part, the movement, which then turned into the Populist Party. It's a fascinating period to read about because people really came together, and they, men and women protested at that point. But I think what we're seeing today is something a little different. there have been so many changes in the last 8 years in terms of, first of all, recovery from that bad recession of 2008, mm-hmm. and passage of gay and legalization of gay marriage, mm-hmm. throughout the country, and work on environmental issues in a variety of ways, and an attempt to create alliances with countries around the world, and our willingness to the United States' decision to also call for change in the Middle East, call for a two-state solution in Israel and Palestine. Those kinds of changes are threatening to some people. And I think that in some ways what we're seeing is a kind of backlash in the government now, reversing many of those changes, introducing laws that will permanently take away public money for reproductive rights. That sort of thing is really extremely frightening to many, especially women, but men and their families and their children and so on. And so they are taking to the streets to say, we don't want to reverse these changes. These changes mean a lot to us in terms of our family. Healthcare is certainly another big issue. I mean, Obama went farther than any president has been able to go in terms of introducing the Affordable Care Act and insuring millions of people who would not otherwise have had insurance and health insurance. And now there's the possibility that that could all be taken away. And I think people are terrified. And so they're vocal now, and they're getting out in the streets, and they're expressing their views. And I hope that someone listens.
Yeah. Well, it's a unique time. I mean, obviously there's been so many elections that were transforming. I mean, none more than
right.
Abraham Lincoln, where countries,
right.
mean, states actually left the country or they seceded.
That's right.
From the
That's
from
right.
the Union. So that was the big one.
Yeah.
I mean, even before he took office, just the election they saw as mm-hmm. As an act of war. But this
That's
one
right.
to me is it just feels different because of the amount of women that are mobilizing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me remind folks that are just tuning in or just turning on their radio. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Professor Sarah Molino is our very special guest, and history is our subject, and specifically this moment in woman's history. And it's hard to look at a moment in time and see how it may be looked at in the future. But, you know, look, we're on radio and we're talking to folks and people are listening to us, and they don't mind us being prognosticators or being predictors of the future. If you have to predict what has just happened and what it will be looked at, you know, 4 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line, is this something that's going to be lasting? Is this something that we're going to be talking about in history classes 20 years from now?
How people responded to the election of
yes.
Trump, is that your question?
Yes.
I think this is a unique moment. We have never had a president who has refused to follow the ordinary practices of the president in terms of revealing his tax returns. He has, you know, he has made arrangements with his businesses, and I haven't read anything in the last day or so about this, but as far as I understand, he has made arrangements with his businesses to simply turn it over to his family, which is questionable. ethically, whether he could have conflicts of interest, and he does have assorted businesses all over the world. He's challenging many of the norms in ordinary diplomacy, and I think I think it will be interesting to see how people respond to it around the world, because I think there is concern around the world about whether or not they're going to be able to work with the Trump administration. And there is also tremendous concern in the country about the reversal and changes that he proposes to institute. And, you know, so it has to go through Congress, and whether cooler heads will prevail in Congress is interesting to see. But certainly every organization who has advocated for the interests of women, people of color, environmental issues, all of those things are sending out emails every day saying, please contribute, we have to keep up the work, we have to keep fighting. And so there is a spirit of energy, I think, to stop, to try to do whatever they can to stop what's happening. I don't know the extent to which there will be power, but there are lies coming out of the White House. I mean, that's another
alternative facts. I think they use the term
alternative facts, right? Alternative facts.
Have you ever heard that? Not to interrupt you, but have you ever heard that term? I mean, there are facts.
No.
Right? There are just simple facts. There's no such thing as alternative facts. There's alternative.
Kelly Conway. No. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you'll pardon me saying this.
Wow.
I Kelly and Conway made it up. And I think it's very interesting way to deal with the problems of truthfulness about, they're about the electoral fraud and all sorts of things that Trump is claiming. But it's, the White House, and there is evidence that, I mean, Trump still has his own cell phone, which is why he's still able to do all his tweeting. And his top advisors all have their own email servers. So his criticism of Hillary and her emails is just complete nonsense. So, they are taking advantage of the power that they have now. And we'll just have to see how the huge bureaucracy of the federal government responds to it, because they have been working for the last 8 years with a very different kind of precedent.
If you think about the position that Kelly Conway is in, you have to defend your guy, so to speak. She's in a political position. She's in a spokesperson position,
right?
And she went, to the wall to do whatever to get this man. And he was, let's face it, he was by all accounts a very flawed candidate. And she did what she did in order to get him elected. Now, having said that, this is also from a purely selfish standpoint, from her standpoint, just like it would be for Colville when President Clinton was elected in 92. You're there to defend your guy. So, I can't imagine in her wildest dream. Well, now, knowing how it went for the last year, I'm sure she knows. But if you turn back the clock a year and a half or 2 years, and you were to tell me that the person that got the next president elected is going to use the term alternative facts on the day after election, the day after taking office, I would think you're parodying something, or it's something you'd see on Saturday Night Live. I mean, this is it me, or is that a shocking statement?
Oh, I think it's a very shocking statement, and their use of language is very provocative and dangerous, it seems to me. But, you know, I think we are at a very frightening moment in our history, and I think that the public reaction that you see to that, and that, you know, the journalists are all writing about their responsibilities as journalists, and that they have to report what's said and analyze it and think, you know, and try to think, help people think critically about the political scene. They did the same for Obama and for any president. That's their job. And yet they're being attacked by the new president. I mean, when he refused to take a question from the CNN guy because he said, you are terrible, you tell terrible news, or you tell the, you know, you work for a terrible organization, I won't speak to you. I mean, that he has the whole system relies on an open conversation between the press and the president, and the press is responsible for holding the president accountable. And Trump is doing his best to make that harm that process in a way, and to damage that process, I guess is the right word, and to cut himself off from any sort of criticism, and so that in any kind of challenging, because he just doesn't like it. He's used to being in a business situation where he's the person who makes the decisions, and the collaborative teamwork is not his, in the sense that the politicians have to work together, is not really his strength. So I think it is. I think it is very frightening, as I said before.
Yeah, you are hearing the voice of Dr. Sarah Molino, Frank McKay here with the Professor Emerita of History for Guilford College, and just a wonderful series on women's history that, you know, I'm proud to be part of. Let me ask you this, Doctor. You saw one of our great actresses, one of the great actresses of all time, and Meryl Streep. I think she was just nominated for a 20th Academy Award, which is by far greater than anything that anyone has ever done. Now, she took her opportunity at the Golden Globes to criticize, not by name, but everyone knew who she was talking about, the president-elect at the time. Now, having done that, that is her right to do that, and she had that right to do. Is it disturbing to you that a man, you know, about a week away from taking office and is going to have the weight of the world on his shoulders, the wars and military actions and jobs and the economy and domestic violence, everything that you could imagine falls under the purview of the president. Did it disturb you at all that he got into a Twitter war with an actress over what her opinion was?
Of course. I mean, I think Twitter is a disaster. And I think that I don't think he should be tweeting, frankly. I think they should take his Twitter account away. That this is, you know, to exchange barbs with people in 140 characters is not a real argument. It's not a real discussion. It's just simply a way to quickly launch a criticism and launch express his angry feelings. And I don't know what, you know, Twitter probably didn't exist when Obama came into office, and he certainly didn't use it in this way. I mean, his public appearances were protected, but everything that Trump thinks comes right out on his Twitter account. So why is the Secret Service? Why is the State Department? Why is Congress allowing him to engage in this? I mean, there seem to be no controls, and no one who is saying to him, this is an inappropriate behavior for for the President of the United States. Wow. I mean, the dignity of the office is really being smeared, as far as I can see.
Well, look, I mean, it's well put. Everything you just said there on about Twitter and about different behavior, but just to give you a quick answer, because we're out of time, why aren't they doing anything about it? The answer, unfortunately, probably is they can't do anything about it. What can they do? I mean, he's not going to show. And again, this is a subject for a whole other time. I mean, when people say, "Are you going to show your tax returns?" Of course, he's not going to show his tax returns. He got through an election without showing his tax returns. Why would he now decide to be transparent and to be everything else? Dr. Molina, as always, just a wonderful take on everything. You know, any closing thoughts for us?
Well, I think we have to continue to watch closely what's happening in the White House, and I also think that I am very supportive of all those people who took to the streets. There were something like 630 protests across the country last Saturday, and that was an amazing number. So, and I think that people will continue to mobilize, and how that affects the political process is a really interesting phenomenon to watch.
Dr. Sarah Molino, thank you very much for everything that you've been saying. Just wonderful and wonderfully put. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. You've been listening to a continuing series with Dr. Sarah Molino on history, and specifically women's history has been our focus. Frank McKay here signing off. Along with the Professor Emerita of History for Guilford College in North Carolina, Sarah Molino. Dr. Sarah Molino has been our guest. Signing off, Frank McKay. We'll see you next time on Breaking Down.